Good morning. In the midst of the storm yesterday afternoon, Joan came home raving about Ladies' Day yesterday. And while she's not attended all, of course, we've not been here all that long, but while she's not attended all, it had to be one of the red letter days for us. And we salute those three ladies who spoke to our ladies. But for all of you responsible, I saw the program that she brought home, and I looked over all of the names and saw the names of our precious younger girls who led the songs and who did the Bible readings, and I look at programs like that. No, they were outstanding lessons. I wanted to know what each lesson was about, and she refused to share with me because she bought me a CD. She says, I want you to hear the speeches for yourself. And I appreciate that very, very much. And I'm looking forward to it because I know they were touching and they were tender and they were also timely. And we're very grateful for those of you involved and all of you behind the scenes. You know, the setting up and the cleaning up and all of those kinds of things, they don't happen by accident. But that's one of the red letter days, I think, in our church year. I cannot say enough from my own heart about how much I love and appreciate the great women, the good women, the known and the unknown women who make up the Lord's church everywhere. Joan and I have returned from a meeting in Effingham, Illinois. We had a wonderful week. About 75 members of that congregation, and yet devout and devoted and with outstanding elders, ministers, family, as well as wives who are sterling examples, and we are so grateful. Wherever we go, we see that. Roy and I have been studying with you from the poetical books of the Old Testament. There are five of those. And Solomon is responsible by inspiration of God for writing of three. No evidence, of course, for this, but it is assumed that Solomon wrote Song of Solomon or the Song of Psalms, songs in the days of young adulthood. Proverbs were to come along in mid-adulthood. And then Ecclesiastes, near the end of his life, when his experiment with life was through. One of the great men, who also was blessed with a great wife, was the late T.B. Larimore, one of the great men that our brotherhood has produced. I wish I could have known better than I know from reading him. I wish I could have known him. Long before Brother Hardiman was called the Prince of Preachers throughout our brotherhood, Brother Larimore would have been the Prince of Preachers, the founder of Mars Hill Bible School in Florence, and therefore known and beloved by Milton and Laurel and their family by reputation and by following up on his work. For 1 year at least, perhaps two, he served as a Bible teacher at FHU, and that is an honor beyond description to be in that role. His home was the home where Jim and Becky Gardner have lived on Crook Avenue for these last several years. And we're so thankful for them and for their appreciation, too, I know, of the life of Brother and Sister Larimore. I wish that I had a collection of all of his sermons. I do not know that such exist. I know the favorite and the one that I consider to be his best, because it happens to be the favorite, is one based upon the book of Ecclesiastes. And it's called The Whole Duty of Man. And in that sterling sermon, he portrays Solomon as an actor. And he's on stage, and he comes out from behind the curtain. There is a prologue where he introduces himself as like the text does, the preacher. And he's going to say that he has taken upon himself to find out what it is that really makes life for every man under the sun, for every person under the sun. And yet, you do not get beyond verse 2 when he says, "Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." And immediately you begin to think, oh, this is going to be a nice play. And then there is Act 1, and there's Act 2, Act 3, and Act 4, and then there's an epilogue where he comes to his conclusion. And what makes this book what many of us consider to be, perhaps, the most relevant book in all of the Bible? And you might wonder, well, how in the world could you say that? For this reason, there are billions of people right now, at this moment, trying to find themselves. They are those who know not God nor the gospel of Christ, and therefore are dead while they are alive. They are without hope. And until they find the one that we know as the Prince of Peace, they will never know peace. They will never know purpose. They will never have vision. They will never have a longing that is deep within us to be desired and satisfied. They will never have hope. And this is why that again on the Lord's Day we are gathered together for the purpose of worshiping the Almighty. And we are here, I am assuming, for every genuine person purpose that Bill mentioned in his opening remarks this morning, to do just that. We love the act of worship, but we also love the act of worship because it means being involved and included with each other. In the story of Solomon, you have the richest man, but who was also the poorest man. You have a man who was the wisest man who became a fool. You have a man of great power who reveals his weakness. You have someone who had tremendous, unparalleled success who became a failure. And so as we look today, we'll do something a little different here. I want us to look at the search for meaning that Solomon, who had such a great beginning, should have known from the very beginning what he concludes in the last of the book. But he still took upon himself to find out what life was really all about. I keep thinking of an old 60s song, "Is That All There Is?" And the song is filled to me with, you know, an emptiness and a longing and a searching for more. And that more will not be found or satisfied until we know God and love Him and obey Him through His Son. Let's look at some of the words from the book on each of these pursuits. First of all, Solomon said, "I search for meaning through wisdom." That was good. You remember when he succeeded his father David and God appeared to him and said, "What would you wish that I do for you?" And rather than asking for riches, he asked for wisdom to judge God's people. What a tremendous response. What perfect response. And therefore, God says in response to him, "Because you have not asked for wealth or riches, I am going to give you both wisdom for which you have asked and wealth unlike the world has seen or will see." If you read the parallel accounts in the book of 1 Kings, you will find that the daily income has to be more than the collection of Walmarts. I mean, it was unbelievable how much he was worth and how much he amassed. We'll get to that in a moment. "I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. My mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. As is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? This too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool. The wise man and the fool alike die. Now, is Solomon saying that it's better to be a fool in life? Oh, no, no, no. The Bible never commends being foolish. But when he gets down to it, he realizes that the fate of the wisest, smartest man ever to live is going to be the same as one who has absolutely no knowledge at all. They're both going to die, and they're both going to be forgotten in time. One will amass a great deal more, and one will be applauded a great deal more at his memorial service. But following that service, life has to go on. Life has to move on. It is the nature of life and our journey to eternity, really. And so Solomon says, I have all this wisdom, and you know how dignitaries from around the world, including the Queen of Sheba of Ethiopia, made long trips to hear Solomon's wisdom through his Proverbs. And it would be a good thing for us to do to read Proverbs every single day. I mean, really, it's that good. It's that true. And it will always be true because it passed through Solomon from the heart and mind of Almighty God. But he said, earthly wisdom. He's not talking here about godly wisdom. He said, if your search for meaning in life is through intellectual attainment, if you can have the highest degree in every single field, you will be weary in your flesh. And you'll be weary in your mind. And by the way, with all the ailments that age brings, there is no guarantee that that wisdom will stay with a person of the highest intellect as long as he thinks and hopes that it will. Now, here we are in a community that hosts the greatest university on this planet. And I speak without bias. When you think about what our purpose is, what our mission is, and who our people are, including the precious students who come to us every year, it would be foolish for us to say that the search for wisdom and knowledge is not important. It is not, though, an empty search. It is not where we're going to find fulfillment and meaning and purpose and vision in our lives. It's going to help tremendously. Our students right now are investing sums of money they do not have for a brighter future that not only will include perhaps a better income for them and a better style of life, but also a much better prepared training for service in the Lord's church. Solomon said, the wise man and the fool both alike die. Therefore, what's the advantage if you're the wisest? Same with wealth. I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? This too is vanity. Now people read the book, but they don't believe the message that Solomon is sharing from his life experience. He's older here now. He's looking back and he's learned all of this. And we take the attitude, especially while we're younger, well, God, give me the chance to be in Solomon's position, and I won't be a fool. I will be wise with it. I will be generous with my wealth. The problem is there's an expression in 1 Kings that says, you know, everything, every utensil that Solomon had was gold rather than silver, both in the palace in Jerusalem and the house that were in the cedars of Lebanon. It was like it was nothing to Solomon, or that is to say, the accumulation of all of that, it was so much, it could not be counted. And yet here's a man who says, as he looks back upon it all, I'm going to leave this somebody. I can't take it with me. And who knows if that person who receives it with all of my hard labor, he talks a lot about his labor. He wasn't lazy. He was industrious. You can't be a 40-year king of Israel without having a lot going on and being busy 24/7. And especially with the fame and notoriety that he achieved because of his wisdom and wealth. Rightly did the Queen of Sheba say, the half hath not been told about this man, especially in those two regards, wisdom and wealth. And yet this is the conclusion he comes to. Now, are we striving in our lives to provide the very best life that we can for our families? Well, of course. Do we enjoy what those who have gone before us could not even dream of enjoying? You know, I wonder in the area of technology, what in the world are we going, where are we going to be, what are we going to be, you know, 10 years from now, 25 years from now, if the Lord tarries, what else can be invented? But we know better than that. It will be. And yet, if that's where we find meaning in our lives, alone, we're going to be disappointed. That is to say, the accumulation of the latest, and the more, and the more, and the more. It's important that we provide for our own. It's important that in the days of youth and middle life that we provide for ourselves for older age. We all understand that. We do not know what is coming. We do not know what is going to be needed for our welfare. And so that's important. But if that's the goal of life, then that's foolish. And then his search through power. The writer of 1 Kings tells us, so King Solomon became greater than all the kings of the earth. Do you realize how big Israel is? 120 miles from north to south, from Dan to Beersheba, and at its widest point, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, 50 miles at its widest. You're talking about a land area that not really is the size of West Tennessee. And yet from that spot came the greatest king of his particular time. And yet he writes in Ecclesiastes, a poor yet wise lad is better than an old and foolish king who no longer knows how to receive instruction. For what advantage does the wise man have over the fool? Who can tell a man what will be after him under the sun? Who can predict the future? The wise man can't, the foolish man can't. So really, what advantage is there? And then lastly, his search through pleasure. I cannot help but think of the one who is responsible for what is known as the Playboy philosophy. The Epicurean philosophy, that is the old immorality rather than introducing a new morality. It is the abuse of oneself, the abuse of one's body, and the abuse of the bodies of others. Roy spoke last week, and I wish I could have heard it, about sexual wisdom. King Solomon loved many foreign women. You know how many? 700 wives. That's a lot of I do's. 300 concubines or handmaids to wives. How in the world was something like that possible? But he did. And here's the result. Solomon held fast to these women in love. In fact, one translation uses the term, he clave to these women. You know how we're told in Ephesians 5, a wife leaves her mom and dad and cleaves to her husband from that time forward? Well, that's what is being said here. He held fast to these in love. When he was old, his wives turned his heart against other gods. And his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David his father had been. Now the Lord was angry with Solomon. But even though the anger of Solomon, or rather the anger of God the Father, did not bother Solomon evidently, because he did not observe what the Lord had commanded. One of the saddest statements in all of Scripture. I have a hard time processing how someone who could be the wisest man ever to live could be the foolish man, the most foolish man who's ever lived. If one searches for meaning in life through all the relationships that he could have, and Wilt Chamberlain in his autobiography claimed to have been with 20,000 and boasted about it. As I sat there and watched that interview, I shook my head with sadness. That man never knew God's design for love, God's design for marriage, God's design for fulfillment of oneself with a very special other. Before God, in whose presence you say, I do, I will. Therefore, we feel sorry for Solomon. We're prone to ask, did Solomon lose his soul because of this? 1 Kings would seem to indicate that. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself, and behold, this too was futility. It's like, we can't get enough, you know. We can't get enough wisdom. We can't get enough wealth. We can't get enough power or prestige or position, whatever you want to call it. We can't get enough pleasure. And so we keep pursuing. Unless we find all of those in the right place with the right goal and the right source. And so as the actor comes back from the curtain for the epilogue, here's what gives us hope that Solomon repented. I pray that he repented. And I feel as a result of this particular statement, surely he did. The conclusion when all has been heard is this. Fear God, that is, listen to him. Revere him, worship him, love him, and keep his commandments, which 1 John 5:3 says are not burdensome. They're not. Because this is the whole of every person. That's the translation from the New American Standard. I know that many of you are familiar with the expression, the whole duty of man, but the word duty was not in the original manuscripts that we have handed down to us, that is to say, the ones available to us. It was a word supplied by scribes along the way. And what it's saying is true. This is the whole of life. This is where it's at. This is what the purpose of life is. Seek your wisdom, your degree, yes. Try to make the best income that you can, yes. Enjoy the position that you're in with responsibility and accountability. Yes. And enjoy the pleasures that God gives us with the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun every single day. Yes. But within limits, within parameters, within boundaries, what is approved of God. And that way you'll show your respect for him. You will show your reverence for him. Keep his commandments, which are not burdensome. Judgment day is coming. Everything that is hidden will be revealed, whether it be good or whether it be evil. This is like the Lord said in Matthew 16:26. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Solomon found it's not in wisdom alone, it's not in wealth alone, it's not in power alone, it's not in pleasure alone. These are rhetorical questions the Lord asked. There is no profit to the man who gains the world and loses his soul. And you can't give up anything that is of greater value than your soul. Or you can't gain anything that is of more value than your soul. This is the picture of our brother Paul Methven, who died early Friday morning of this week. For those of us who've had the opportunity to know and love Brother Paul Methven of Northern California, where his name is synonymous throughout that region with the Churches of Christ, he had a struggle of the last 2 to 3 years with malignancy. He was the longtime director, first of the Yosemite Bible Encampment, family encampment, every July, and then later was moved to Lake Tahoe, and some of us have had the opportunity to go in recent years, thanks especially to Brother Milton developing a relationship with Brother Paul. It would have been one of the great losses for Joan and for me not to have known Paul and Pat Methven and their family, whose children are coming to school at Freed Hardeman. For our students who know Sonny Hooper, this is her grandfather, and Sonny arrived home 8 hours before Brother Paul died. And she was by his bedside. The whole family was by his bedside. This picture and the ones that were taken later in the week are much worse, unrecognizable. This is from last Sunday morning when he preached his last lesson. Look at that worn out New Testament that he is holding. For the last couple of years, he has been perched on a chair on a stage or in front of a stage at the congregation where he preached. He refused to stop preaching. He refused to stop. He refused to quit. The lesson last Sunday morning was 3 to 5 minutes. It's all the strength that he could muster. Took his text from Philippians 3:12-15. His audience was his family. Children, grandchildren, devoted wife of 60 plus years, Pat, never left him, and is grieving so much now that she can hardly think of a memorial service of what to do. So greatly is this man loved. You could not help but be a better person by being with Paul Methven. You just couldn't. So spiritual. And that passage from Philippians 3:12-15 is the one that says, "This one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and looking forward to those things which are to come, which are ahead, I press on. I press on toward the high calling of God in Christ Jesus." Man. That is so like him. I've told him before how appropriately named he was, Brother Milton. Paul. He loved the Apostle Paul. And he chose one of Paul's greatest texts as his last lesson. And his family was there to record it and to witness it, and will never forget it. Was Paul Methven a rich man Oh, yes, indeed. Rich without money. A preacher all of his life. Was he a man of wisdom? Oh, yes. He knew the book till he wore it absolutely out. Probably held together by all kinds of tape. Did he have power? You better believe it. The power of influence. That family encampment could have been named the Paul Methven family encampment. His influence was so great. Did he have pleasure? Yes, every day. In the love of his life, Pat. In the love of his children and precious grandchildren. Do you know Sonny? Sonny's quite a young lady. Yes, his power and his pleasure were great, but his greatest pleasure was in serving the Lord every day and telling other people every day, not just on Sunday, but every day about Jesus. I want to be like Paul Methven. I really do. Because I'm beyond the ability to describe. This man found meaning. And it's the only way. Fear God, keep his commandments. And now he's safe in the arms of Jesus, wearing a crown that is promised to all of those who love his appearing, Paul says in 2 Timothy 4:8. I know I've gone beyond time, for which I apologize, but this is a message, especially with the timing of Brother Paul's death Friday, that to me exemplifies that conclusion that Solomon has drawn from a, you could say, misspent life of pursuit of the wrong things. That is to say, an end in and of themselves. They are a means to an end. The end is going to heaven. And that is where that we want you to be, and for all of us to be, and for all of us to be there together. I love it when someone closes their prayers, Father, please bless each one of us without the loss of a one. And that's our prayer today. If you've not been baptized into Christ, you're outside of Christ and lost. I take no joy in telling you that, but that's the word of the Bible. It shows the church's love for your soul. If you're in Christ, but you've gone back out of Christ, you're out of Christ again, and you need to be brought back. And that's why we sing the invitation. Will you come as we stand?